Well, thank you, Lawrence, and thanks to Kanga News for the opportunity to be back here today. I'm always very enthused to come to this great event, and great to see so many participants here this morning. What I wanted to talk about today are some important updates to the system for monetary policy implementation in Australia. The Reserve Bank Board discussed this late last year, and we're now ready to announce some operational changes to our open market operations, or OMOs, that will support the transition to ample reserves. I think this is important because monetary policy implementation is really at the core of the financial system's plumbing. It's how we give effect to changes in the cash rate target. It's how we influence other money market rates and provide liquidity to the banking system. And importantly, it enables us to conduct monetary policy in a way that best contributes to both price stability and full employment. So the RBA achieves this by providing banks access to exchange settlement balances, otherwise known as reserves. So banks use these funds to settle payments with other banks and with the RBA, and banks also hold reserves for precautionary and regulatory purposes. Now, in response to various price signals to help manage their reserves and deal with their funding needs, banks also borrow and lend reserves in money markets. And these transactions underpin key interest rates in the Australian economy, such as the cash rate and short-term money market rates like bank bill swap rates. An effective monetary policy implementation system is critical for all market participants. It's going to smooth the transmission of monetary policy, support good functioning of money markets, and hence other key markets, much of which you'll be talking about today and tomorrow. And it encourages greater resilience in the financial system. So in March of last year, the Reserve Bank Board endorsed the system, the new system for implementing monetary policy. Banks' demand for reserves would be satisfied in full at our OMOs at a price near the cash rate target using full allotment repurchase operations, auctions. So we call this system obviously ample reserves with full allotment because it supplies as many reserves to the banks as they demand at our open market operations. And in April last year, I discussed why the board had endorsed that framework. In brief, it's a simpler and much more robust system for us to operate compared with the alternatives. It's also quite similar to other systems used by other central banks, including the ECB and the Bank of England. So banks are going to determine the amount of reserves they hold to suit their liquidity needs. And the system is therefore resilient to structural changes that affect banks' underlying demand for liquidity, as well as policies that might affect the size of the RBA's balance sheet, such as unconventional policies if they were to become necessary again. And at the same time, what it does is it implies a materially larger steady state balance sheet for the central bank compared with pre-pandemic times. Over the past year or so, we've been working on the detailed designs of that system, and today I'm going to announce some important changes. I want to stress that these changes are very much operational in nature. They do not represent, nor do they signal a shift in the stance of monetary policy, and they don't have a bearing on the Monetary Policy Board's current approach to allowing bond holdings acquired during the pandemic to mature. Specifically, effective from next Wednesday, the 9th of April, we will increase the price of all new OMO repos by five basis points, taking them 10 basis points over the cash rate target. OMO will continue to be offered at a floating rate. We'll also be introducing a 7-day term in addition to the existing 28-day term at each of our weekly OMOs. Just before I outline the Reserve Bank Board's deliberations and explaining why we've decided to make these changes, I want to step through some recent market developments. So, as you can see on the chart on the left here, reserves have declined by around $110 billion over the past year or so. Most of this reflected the final repayment of the term funding facility in June of last year. And subsequently, the level of reserves has fluctuated around $240 billion. and the cash rate has remained close to but slightly below the cash rate target. Activity at our OMOs, they increased from around $3 billion a week in the June quarter of 2024 and stabilised around $7 billion. Now, this increase occurred shortly after that final repayment of the TFF that I just spoke about, alongside a broader tightening in liquidity conditions in money markets at that time globally. In response, banks accessed more reserves from OMO, and some of these funds, and you can see that in the orange bars on the bottom of the graph on the left-hand side here, and some of those funds appeared to have been recycled into other money markets. I think that provided us with an early indication that full allotment was working as it was intended. Reserves rose automatically to an increase in demand for liquidity, while increases in money market rates were largely contained. Current market conditions suggest that the transition to ample reserves, that is, the level of supply of reserves that's in balance with banks' underlying demand, that's still ongoing. So we're not there yet. The stock of reserves remains pretty high. That's reflecting the bonds that are still on the RBA's books that we purchased during the pandemic. Our expectation is that reserves will continue to decline gradually, and you can see that in these projections presented here. Do that for a time in response to the decline in our bond holdings. Eventually, though, the supply of reserves is going to approach banks' underlying demand, and thereafter, banks' participation in OMO, that should pick up to offset the effect of any further declines in the RBA's bond holdings. Now, it's very hard to estimate underlying demand for reserves, and it's really only going to become evident as we approach ample reserves. So we'll know we're there when we arrive. We've done some modelling work, and the banks have also provided us very helpfully with estimates of their own demand for reserves. And all of that suggests that underlying reserves really could be anywhere between $100 billion and $200 billion, and that's shown here in the chart. But remember, one advantage of our full allotment system in the face of such uncertainty is that the transition to ample reserves can occur without us needing to know exactly what the level of banks' underlying demand is ahead of time. OMO use will rise automatically. And such a move, combined with an assessment of market conditions, our liaison with banks, which is ongoing, that's going to indicate to us when we've reached ample level. The other thing we might expect is that private activity may also increase as we approach this point, particularly in short-term repo and cash markets. And that's because banks wanting to hold additional reserves on non-OMO days, they're going to seek to borrow them in private markets. And other banks, they can lend reserves if they have more than they need at the time. And the scale of this activity will depend in part on the extent to which banks choose to economise on their reserve holdings, given that obtaining reserves at OMO, leaving them in their ES accounts, comes at a cost to the banks. So I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. So over the past year, the RBA has consulted with the banks. We've estimated these underlying demand for reserves, and we've considered very carefully the ways in which this new system might operate. We published a summary of the consultation responses on our website just this morning, and I want to thank you all who contributed. And all of that work informed discussions at the Reserve Bank Board late last year, and at those meetings, three principles for the ample reserve system were considered. So the very first is to have sufficient monetary control. The board agreed that the primary objective for the monetary policy implementation system was to achieve sufficient monetary control. And what that means is the cash rate trading close enough to the target, with other short-term interest rates tethered to the cash rate to be consistent with the desired stance of monetary policy. A second principle was to support private markets. The board agreed that we could achieve the primary objective of monetary control while still allowing deviations of the cash rate from target. Allowing the cash rate to trade within a modest range, that's going to avoid the RBA having an overly large presence in markets and thereby encourage banks to use private markets. And well-functioning private markets, that's going to help banks to better manage their funding needs in normal times and in times of stress. Banks can be encouraged to use private markets by setting the price for OMO in a way that avoids the RBA having an overly large presence in that market. In addition, using a mix of different operations to supply reserves could also be used to avoid an overly large presence in any one market. And I'll come back to that in a minute. And then the third principle was to minimise risk to the RBA balance sheet. So providing reserves carries some risks for the RBA, both of a financial and an operational nature. The size and nature of the risks depends on the quantity of reserves as well as the characteristics of the operations that we use to supply them. Now, under an ample system, the RBA is going to provide more reserves compared with the earlier corridor system. OMOs themselves don't carry interest rate risk because the floating rate of our OMOs is linked directly to the rate we pay on our liabilities. However, the use of other operations to supply reserves could entail financial risk. So the key question that we considered in our deliberations was how to balance these three principles, given there's some tension between them. So just as an example, we could have a high degree of monetary control by setting a very low price for OMO, very close to the ES rate. But that would encourage banks to obtain a lot of reserves via OMO, and thereby crowding out private market activity and implying quite a large balance sheet for the RBA. So decisions on the configuration of OMO, as well as the mix of other operations to supply reserves, that'll need to balance out these various trade-offs. So now let me talk about the changes in how we've configured OMO. So we've been running full allotment OMO since the onset of the pandemic. I remember the time quite clearly. We switched these from daily to weekly auctions later on in October of 2021. And then we offered a 28-day term at a price 5 basis points above, at that time, the overnight index swap rate from early 2022. And then we switched that pricing to a floating rate that was 5 basis points above the cash rate target from February of last year. And all through that time, I think the system's worked well under excess reserve system, and it's delivered an acceptable degree of monetary control. However, as reserves continue to decline, as shown in this chart, and the demand for OMO will therefore pick up when reserves are no longer in excess of banks' underlying needs, we judge some further changes were warranted. Now, a key issue is that at the price of 5 basis points above the cash rate target, meeting a large increase in the demand for funds at OMO might impair, at least at the margin, the health of these other private money markets. Similarly, this low price for OMO will lead to a larger RBA balance sheet than otherwise and imply a tighter degree of monetary control than we judged to be necessary. At the same time, the 28-day tenor was thought to be too long for those banks that may need additional reserves for only short periods. And it's much longer than the tenor of some of the key markets that we're trying to influence, particularly the market for overnight cash. So the changes I've announced will better allow us to balance these various trade-offs between meeting the three principles that I've already talked about. And just to reiterate, the two changes from next week are the increase in the price of all new OMO repos from 5 to 10 basis points over the cash rate target, and we'll offer that 7-day tenor in addition to the current 28-day tenor. Auctions will continue to take place once a week, generally on a Wednesday morning. So an OMO rate of 10 basis points over the cash rate target, we think that remains consistent with the board's desired degree of monetary control. Under this higher OMO price, we're going to expect the cash rate will trade within a reasonable range of the cash rate target. Accordingly, the cash rate and other money market rates will be consistent with the desired stance of monetary policy. But importantly, this higher price for OMO implies a lower overall demand for reserves than otherwise. And the higher price will provide more of an incentive for participants to recycle reserves in markets. Banks can still come to our OMO operations on a Wednesday to acquire reserves to meet their payments needs, to obtain precaution reserves, for unexpected liquidity needs, or indeed to obtain reserves that they might want at some stage to lend to others. But the higher price is going to reduce banks' incentive to obtain more reserves than necessary. And then a bank can make good use of private markets as a source of reserves if they face an unexpected need for funds. Offering the 7-day tenor, that's got a couple of benefits. First, OMO will provide a closer substitute to overnight cash and funding from other short-term money markets. And by itself, that's going to tighten the degree of monetary control over these key markets. But that decision is also consistent with the feedback we receive from market participants that a shorter tenor would help them better manage their liquidity needs. But respondents to the consultation also expressed an interest still in the 28-day tenor. And retaining that longer tenor would allow banks, but also us, to more efficiently manage OMO activity by reducing operational burdens with more frequent rolling of positions. During the consultation, some market participants wanted more frequent operations. And we considered that, but we believe the current weekly auction is enough to anchor the cash rate and tether other money market rates to the target. And that setup also encourages banks, importantly, to use private markets, especially on non-OMO days. So in line with APRA's standards, banks must have strong frameworks for forecasting their liquidity demands, manage their liquidity risks. And those processes are becoming, they've always been important, but they're becoming increasingly important as banks need to come back and engage more in private money markets to meet their liquidity needs. And as we transition to the ample reserve system, the RBA, market participants, we're all going to gain valuable insights, no doubt. We'll actively monitor market conditions, we'll engage with the banks on a regular basis as we do, and respond if needed, including by adjusting our OMO or other administered rates. So I want to just talk through briefly a few features of the ample reserve system. And the first is private markets. So as we transition from towards ample reserves, some banks may need more liquidity than their current ES balances. And one option is to go and borrow reserves from a bank that happens to have a surplus at the time, and that is going to benefit both banks on both sides of such transactions. And this private market activity may be associated with some short-term volatility in money markets as prices adjust to supply and demand changes. And I think within reason, that's just a sign of healthy markets. That's a good thing. Weekly full allotment OMOs will help banks meet their liquidity needs. But to limit volatility, banks should be ready to transact in various markets, including the cash market. And banks might use OMOs to acquire reserves for precautionary reasons, as I suggested, or indeed to lend them into other markets when prices are high. And over time, I think banks are going to refine their reserve management approaches they'll learn by doing under the ample reserve system. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the RBA's overnight standing facility. So look, if banks face unexpected liquidity needs on a non-OMO day or after on the Wednesday but after OMO's already taken place and they can't find liquidity on suitable terms in private markets, then we would expect and indeed encourage them to use the RBA's overnight standing facility. So what is that? Well, that's a facility that provides reserves overnight at a price of 25 basis points above the cash rate target. What that does is it limits deviations in money market rates from the cash rate target set by the Monetary Policy Board. So while that price is set to avoid displacing too much private market activity, it does provide an incentive for banks to use the facility when other sources are much more expensive. Now, we recognise that historically market participants have been reluctant to use that facility. However, both the RBA and APRA expect that the banks should use the OSF as part of their liquidity management if they fall short on their daily liquidity needs, and we're going to encourage its use as part of the new normal. Now, in the rare case of broader stress across the banking system, we could and have always had the option to run an unscheduled OMO. But that would not be the standard approach in the case of a few banks requiring additional liquidity that could otherwise be provided in the market or via the overnight standing facility. Just a few words on other operations. In addition to open market repo operations, the RBA plans to use other operations, we've spoken about this before, to provide reserves across a range of markets. So those include FX swaps and purchases of short-dated government bonds. We'd not use those operations to influence rates or liquidity in those markets. Rather, what they're going to do is help us to limit the extent of our footprint in any one market, particularly in the repo market. And the other thing that will help us with is to manage operational risks. So the use of these operations is expected to be some time away, partly because the reserves out there from our bond holdings are still pretty substantial. Those reserves are going to decline gradually, and as they do, OMO should rise gradually to meet demand as the supply of reserves from the bonds decline. So we're going to outline all of those plans for these operations before we actively use them to manage monetary policy implementation. And then just a final point before I wrap up, and this graph is very involved, but I think I'll hold your hand a bit through it. It's about the rate that we pay on RBA reserves, the ES rate. So when the RBA moved to an excess reserve system starting back in March of 2020, banks had little need to borrow in the cash market, and the cash rate became closely anchored to the ES rate. And you can see this in this chart, that the cash rate moves right down. These are spreads to the ES rate, to be very close to the ES rate, just a few basis points above the ES rate. The black dots are some of the trades that happen in any given month, so there's always a bit of a spread, and then the orange line is what the published cash rate was on the day. So the Reserve Bank board narrowed the spread between the cash target and the ES rate to just 10 basis points at that and announced the ES rate on it in its monetary policy decisions, and it's been doing that for some time. But as we continue to transition to ample reserves, borrowing rates in private markets will rise as demand for liquidity from those sources increases, partly due to the higher rate at our weekly OMO. And we can see some of that rise has already been happening over a period of time. But what this means is that the ES rate will be a less significant as an anchor. And because of this, starting in May, the Monetary Policy Board will no longer be announcing the ES rate. It will, of course, be announcing the cash rate target in its decisions, but not the ES rate. Now, moreover, from time to time, the RBA may decide to adjust the ES rate if that's going to help us to better meet those objectives of the ample reserve system. For example, we might need to provide market participants with more of an incentive to recycle excess reserves by altering the ES rate, thereby changing the opportunity cost of holding reserves. Any such adjustment, though, would be purely operational in nature. It would not represent a shift in the stance of monetary policy. And indeed, such changes in the ES rate could occur as and when they're needed. And while we'd convey those very clearly to the market, such a change would not require the approval of or the announcement by the Monetary Policy Board. So let me just wrap up with a few of the next steps. So just to reiterate, those changes I've outlined, they're going to take place from our auction next week on the 9th of April. It's important that banks focus on their liquidity management practices as we continue to transition to ample reserves. During the excess reserves period, many didn't need to top up their reserves, but now all banks must be ready to use our facilities and transact in private markets. And as I've said, the RBA and APRA are going to encourage banks to use the overnight standing facility as needed as part of their routine liquidity management. Indeed, today we've released a joint statement to emphasise this commitment, and together we're going to engage with banks to ensure they understand the role of the OSF and are comfortable and ready to use it to manage liquidity as the system transitions to an ample level of reserves. Meanwhile, we'll continue to monitor conditions in key markets, including by talking regularly with market participants. And finally, just to wrap up, I do want to stress again that these changes have no implications for the stance of monetary policy. They do, however, represent important changes in the plumbing that supports the transmission of monetary policy and therefore underpins critical activities across the financial system. I thank you for your time this morning. I think Lawrence is going to run a few questions my way.
Yes, thanks, Chris. A couple of questions coming from the audience. We might have time for one more, or a couple more if anyone wants to send them, but let's take at least a couple of these. Chris, how do you think about the trade-off between letting markets take care of liquidity management and allocation versus the RBA sitting as a backstop with open market operations? How are you calibrating the liquidity approach so market forces are still present?
Yeah, that question really is at the heart of my presentation today. And the key consideration here is those three principles. So first and foremost, it's about monetary control. But we also, as much as we can, want to encourage private market activity. That's to ensure that the financial system is as healthy as it can be and take on no more risk on our balance sheet than is necessary. So how have we done that? Well, probably the first way and the most obvious is to make sure OMO's not too cheap. So we've increased the price. It's gone from 5 above the cash rate target to 10. The other thing is it's not too frequent. It's not every day. So there'll be other days where there is no more liquidity in the system than was provided by our other operations and our OMO on the Wednesday that's just passed. So that will encourage banks that have a need on those days to go to other banks and to markets to look for liquidity. And then I think the other thing to recognise too is also to have appropriate tenors. So not too many, not really short term. Right. So if you need really short-term funding, even shorter than 7 days, there are better options than coming to us. So that's sort of how we're thinking about these things. There's the price, but also other operational aspects that help encourage private activity.
Thanks, Chris. Let's move on to the next one. Is there a level of balance sheet growth through OMO with which the RBA would be uncomfortable?
You might think there would be, but the answer is no. And that is because under a full allotment auctions, OMO is going to be the marginal source of reserves, but it's really going to determine, according to the bank's needs, the size of the RBA's balance sheet. Now, under the old system, the corridor system, we used to determine that. But under this system, it's the banks that will ultimately determine the size of our balance sheet. Now, the price of OMO will have an effect. A slightly higher price means banks will demand a bit less than otherwise and be encouraged to economise on reserves at the margin. The other thing we can do to affect the risk on our balance sheet is have a different mix, various mixes of operations. And I mentioned we'll be thinking about that and announcing plans in due course on things like FX swaps and AGS purchases. But from my charts, you could see we don't need to purchase AGS for some time.
Sure, thanks, Chris. Another question's come in while you were talking. If changing the ES rate does not require board approval and is not announced at the monetary policy meeting, through what channel is it going to be announced? Should there be changes?
Good question. I mean, we put out important market announcements on a regular basis on sometimes things that don't relate to board decisions. So we'll just use the usual channels and get them out there, make sure that everyone has equal access to them in a timely fashion.
Brilliant. Thanks, Chris. We're more or less on time, and I think we're out of questions, so I'm sure everyone would like to join me in thanking Chris for his thoughts today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.